Hi, you are listening to Justice Radio with Swathi Sivasubramanian
and Liv Eckert of the Young People's Caucus.
We are excited to be here, and we'll start by sharing a little bit about who the Young People's Caucus is. Our mission at the Young People's Caucus is to create consistent, sustainable, and meaningful opportunities for young people in Maine to directly inform decisions about and changes to the public systems that impact their lives and futures. We know that young people in Maine have a wide range of experiences of and with Maine's public systems. Some young people have experienced support and a deep sense of belonging through Maine's public school systems, and some young people have experienced the opposite. Some young people have experienced individual mentors through the criminal legal system, and some have experienced deep harms at the hands of the criminal legal system. And we hold this nuance and complexity in our work. Our equity focus is young people who have direct experience with the criminal legal system and or the child welfare system, and BIPOC and immigrant youth in Maine. YPC is an initiative of the Katherine Cutler Institute at the University of Southern Maine. I'm Swathi, she, her, and I am program manager of YPC. I'm a former teacher, and I'm here in this work because I believe deeply in the possibility of co-creating communities that truly support belonging, that support healthy conflict and repair, and can move towards healing for all. Yeah, I just know that we can do this differently.
And I'm Liv. I'm the program coordinator of YPC and a recent grad from USM with my Master's of Social Work. I'm here because I believe in finding solutions for our justice system that tackle root causes using the voices of the people who are impacted. This is our first show with Justice Radio and our first podcast and radio show in general. We're excited and grateful to be here, and we know our show will grow, change, develop as we co-create this space with our youth leaders, adult partners, and Justice Radio audience. We appreciate you all being on this journey with us.
We're here on Justice Radio, contributing to Justice Radio to focus on youth justice. We intend for this space to be a chance to explore the state of healing, repair, justice for young people in Maine. And we kind of have three very general guiding questions for that exploration. First is just, where are we? Where are we in the state of healing and repair and justice for young people in Maine? How did we get here? And where do we go from here?
And we want to explore this framework through exploring questions like, how do we learn what we think about crime and punishment? How do we get here? What socializes us into our feelings around justice? Lastly, exploring what is justice, freedom, and liberation with young people.
We're starting today with an exploration of how and when we develop our beliefs around punishment, safety, and justice. This is just the beginning of a conversation that will continue in multiple ways with multiple people over the course of our tenure with this radio show. And today, we're talking with members of YPC's media team.
The YPC media team is a virtual and physical space in which youth are empowered through community to engage in change-making by creating and providing information on social media. We engage in social justice with an intention to transparency and accuracy that promotes accessible information and the well-being of youth. We want to create a space where youth can work with adults to more actively engage in their communities and the political system surrounding them. I help supervise the media team, but they made that mission statement all on their own and do a really great job of following it through. You can follow us on Instagram at the Young People's Caucus.
Sweet. We're going to switch, get us into that conversation in just a second. You will hear these questions throughout our conversation, but we just wanted to like pull them out and share them before the conversation starts as well. Two of our guiding questions in this conversation we're about to share were, one, how was punishment framed for you in your childhood? What did it mean in your family or your school or your community to quote unquote get in trouble? And the second, how was safety talked about in your childhood? What was safe? What was unsafe? Okay, on to our conversation. Okay, we're going to start our circle roundtable conversation with an opening round, inviting everyone to share anything that you want to share about yourself and your identities. And if you could have a superhero power, what would it be?
My name is Ashanti. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm from Jamaica and I'm 19. And if I was supposed to have a superpower, it would be to listen to everybody's thoughts before they even think them, so I can act accordingly.
Well, my name is Sissy Promise Seninka. I'm from DRC Congo.
I'm 19, soon to be 19 though. My pronouns are she, her, hers. If I would like to have a superpower, I would like to have a power of healing people from heartbreaking. Yeah, because I feel like if I would do that, I'll be able to heal people who don't have people who can listen to them or give them whatever they want to make their heart or their feelings feel better.
Thanks, Cecile. We need that. Okay, hey. I'm Swathi Sivasubramanian, she, her. I work at the Katherine Cutler Institute, and I am Indian American, and I have a little baby, and I'm excited to be here. And if I could have a superhero power, it would be to talk to and, like, be friends with animals, especially cats.
My name is Kira Monica. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I am Rwandan American, and I was born in Rwanda, and I went to when I was 5. I'm also 17, and if I were to have any superpower, I agree with Ashanti. I would like to be able to, like, read minds. And for that same reason of acting accordingly, I think that would be very useful for that. And then also, I would like to be like, have telekinesis and be able to move things with my hands or with my mind. I think that would be cool.
Okay, hi. I'm Liv, Olivia Eckert. I use she, her pronouns. I am 25 and I'm the program coordinator at YPC. I think that I'm also from Connecticut and I live in Portland, Maine currently. I think that if I had to have a superpower, I'm kind of on the same page as Cecile. I would like to have the power of, like, not just, it's like Mantis from Guardians of the Galaxy, if you've ever seen that movie. She has, like, a superpower of, like, healing people by sort of, like, she can, like, she can feel their feelings. It's like a power of empathy, but she can also, like, induce them into, like, sleep or calm or, like, happiness or laughter. And I always thought that was, like, really beautiful, and I feel connected to wanting that.
Okay, for our first question round, we invite y'all to share anything that comes up to this question. How was punishment framed for you in your childhood or growing up? Growing up, what did it mean in your family or in school or in your community to quote unquote get in trouble?
All right. I kind of wrote my answer in my notes, so I'm going to just read it. For me growing up lower class, it kind of shaped the way I experienced discipline and, like, was taught boundaries. So I didn't really have, like, a lot of, I guess, material possessions that could be taken away when I got in trouble. So when I got in trouble, it was more about, it wasn't about losing stuff. It was about, like, losing privileges and connection. For example, me and my siblings were, like, we were separated because I think that's where a lot of the trouble, quote-unquote trouble that I was giving came from me being around my siblings. So that was, like, a form of punishment for us, was to be, like, separated. Or I'd have to get more chores, like cleaning the whole house or, like, having to go to bed early. But when I got older, it moved away from that, those sorts of punishments, to it being more, like, focused on taking stuff away that I had earned, like my full privileges and stuff like that. So it was like I feel like there was a boundary of, like, respect there, even though I was being, like, punished or being disciplined. So I kind of, like, implement that in my own life today.
Well, for me growing up, I didn't have that much punishment, but there was this punishment. Now I still, like, think about it. It was like going out without my dad's permission or my grandma. I can't grow up with my grandma. Going out without permission, just sneak out. So I remember one day I had to sneak out for my friends, sleep over even that night. And instead of my dad beating me or, you know, he told me that I have to stay in the house for several days. He couldn't tell which days or 2 days. He's like, you cannot get out of there when I told you so. So being in that moment, I didn't like it, but because he said so, I had to stay there. And in the community, it was like a same thing, because in Congo, when you go out without parents' permission, even if it could be your mom or not your mom, they have to ask you if your dad knows you are here, which is the same thing here in America, but they can literally slap you that you are doing something wrong. She's not your mom, but she's literally slapping you instead of your mom and doing it. So for me, growing up like that, it was kind of hard for me because they're taking away my friends. They don't want to pray. They don't want me to pray with my friends. So I kind of, growing up, don't like it. And sometimes I'm like, oh God, I don't wish to live with my dad this moment, but I wish to live with my grandma, which is the worst. It was really the worst moment because my grandma was the one who can let me go out. So I had to stay in the house to the point I have to stay in the house, no eating for a day because I did whatever they don't want me to do. It was the same thing with the community. I can't go out with my friends because their mama knew that I'm in trouble. They're like, oh, you're in trouble. We know you're in trouble. You're not allowed to come in this house. But as I grew up, I found out it was something they tried to protect me. The country I came from was Congo. It wasn't safe. So for you to go out, you don't know who you're going to go with, even a friend that you can't be trust. So I figured it was my dad wants to protect me. So I appreciate for him for that. So
thanks for sharing that, Cecile. Yeah, I relate so much to some of what you were saying about your dad's attempts to protect you, meaning that he like kind of restricted you. Like mm-hmm. I had a very similar experience. And I grew up here in the U.S. in Massachusetts. And I grew up with a dad who was like very scared of here, I think. I think he felt scared of the like, I don't really know, but I think he felt scared of like the unknownness of the community that we were in. Like he never knew any of our neighbors. We never had like direct relationships with the people around us. Mostly because, yeah, my parents found community with other Indian Americans and did not find community with other people who were like directly around us. So anyway, that's just making me think about my dad's, the way that my dad understood safety too meant that we like locked our doors, we put chains on our doors, like I was not allowed to go out. It was like, it was so many like barricades. Yeah. And it made it feel like it was really like up to us, like safety was up to us. There wasn't like an outside group or force or community who was like supporting that. You know, it made it feel like we are very personally responsible for our own safety. I don't know. It was a weird, I hated it. I hated it so much. I think I just kind of answered the second question by accident, but I guess I'll like, yeah, I don't know. It just felt connected. I felt moved to say that when you just shared that, Cecile. And I'll just say one other thing and then I'll pass it along and we can have another round for whatever else comes up. When I was reflecting on how punishment was framed for me or what it meant to get in trouble, I was thinking about how it felt in my family. It felt like there was like not really an option to get in trouble. Like that was just like, and there was like such a clear black and white sense of good and bad. So I remember like just as a very young girl, that I often, I think, now when I reflect on it, it feels like maybe often, but I remember instances of lying to try to like fit into the community that I was in, like making things up. Like I think Liv has heard this story, but when I was in kindergarten or something, maybe no daycare, when I was like, I was in younger than kindergarten. I remember this. I told another girl in class who was talking about her ballet class that I also took ballet and I had never like done any of that, but I was just like trying to be kind of white, I think. And it was a lie and she knew it and she just like wanted to bust me for it. So when my mom came to pick me up, she asked my mom if I took ballet and my mom was like, no, or I don't know, danced ballet. And yeah, my mom was like, no. And then I remember how mad my mom was at me for doing that, for having made something up or lied, and like how, yeah, that was like so clearly like bad in her head. So I guess when I think about getting in trouble, it feels like mostly my parents communicated to me a very black and white sense of what was good and bad. And then when you did something bad, like lying, which to them was just like objectively bad, there was so much shame around it. Like I started to feel just like so shitty for having that impulse. And it got like just tied to shame. I don't know. That's a theme that comes up also in my mind when I'm thinking about this.
You're listening to Justice Radio with Swathi and Liv and the YPC media team. discussing the framing of punishment in our childhoods.
I'll pass it over to you, Karen.
I think when I thought about this, a lot of it was thinking about when I was really young, or like when I was growing up a lot, and I grew up in Central Maine, so like Augusta, and that was like a very white place, and like the people that weren't white in that place were Arab, so like it was very, I don't know, there was like no diversity. It was like you're either white or you're Arab, and then I'd be like, once in a blue moon, which is a blue black, and even then, it's not something you like stay in your life, it's just like something you're passing through. But I think growing up in that atmosphere of being like the only black family ever, like at church, in the store, in my school, and like in the communities I was in, being in trouble like outside of the house or getting in trouble outside in like that community of people where your parents didn't have, like, because our parents, like similar to Swahili, like they didn't really have community in the places that we were, unless it was like our neighbor when we moved out of the apartments. But like when I was growing up, like we lived in apartments, and there we didn't really have community. Like our parents didn't go over to our neighbors' houses. The friends that my dad did have were from work, and that was like it. And my mom didn't really have friends unless they were like professors that went to college. So like our community was very strictly like family outside of Augusta, and like them, like you don't really see them a lot because, you know, like once a year time is fine. I guess if you're in school, like you're stuff like that. But basically outside of the house, like getting in trouble was like a big deal. Like you're the only ones like getting in trouble. It's like you're making everybody look bad, and then the things that you're doing are gonna affect your siblings because you're the oldest, or Noah, like you're the second oldest. And I think that made me, even then I didn't realize it, but that made me like very aware of like everything that I did. And sometimes when I look back, I'm like, wow, at a very young age I understood that I couldn't get in trouble or I couldn't do some things regardless of like what I thought in the moment. Like I thought it was just my fault, like, oh, I don't want to do that, but it was like things that I hadn't been told when I was younger. And then I think at home it was just like your parents weren't the best for you, so they're gonna like, if you do something bad, you're gonna have to come out. That's something that we do, like you have to sit on your knees and like raise up your hand if you're in trouble. Like you didn't get put in the corner and stuff, like that's what our punishment was. And then yeah, I don't know, I think like for school and outside it was very like forbidden, like you don't get in trouble outside the house, because when you get in trouble, like who's gonna help you, who's gonna be there to advocate for you? Not us, because also they were like immigrants and they barely spoke language, so sometimes it was like hard to understand. But yeah, it was very much like don't get in trouble outside the house, and then at home you're getting in trouble because it's like for your benefit, so that things happen when you're older. And then how was it framed? I think my dad was very like a lot more strict about it, and like don't do this, don't do that. But I think my mom understood and was like able to bring like the empathy and the compassion and grace in of like, so like this is what you did, this is wrong, and let's like think about how this is gonna be repeated.
I think for me, I definitely resonate with the themes that we've heard so far of like shame. I think that for school, and like when I was young and growing up in school, I grew up in a majorly middle class white town, and getting in trouble was like, it kind of meant to get publicly shamed in a way, in like front of the classroom. And a lot of times, like in order to do that, and I'm sure a lot of places did this, it was like they would use like green, yellow, and like red cards with each of our names to indicate like where people stood in the classroom, like if they were in a good place or a bad place. There was also like the star system at points to indicate like who the best kids were, like who did the most, who did the best. And so you could see there was like a little level system in the classroom. And then there were also like moments of like, if you did something really bad, the teacher would like publicly scold you and you would go to the principals. And so then you knew who, when, where, why kids were like getting in trouble. I think the first time that I ever like got in trouble or like got the yellow card was over like something so silly. I didn't get in trouble that much. I was quite nerdy growing up. I just really liked school. I really liked school. I really liked homework. I liked learning. And I also like, yeah, there was this one time in my fourth grade class, and I was sitting across from a boy that I liked, and My teacher was like right behind us, Miss Butterly. What's her name? And I liked her. She was like young and cool. I was talking to the boy about how I was really excited to go to fifth grade. And I didn't say this out loud, but my reasoning was because I was really excited because the homework was going to be harder. I was really excited to like go and have like bigger textbooks and like harder homework. But what I said out loud, because this guy was like a cool guy, you know, like we used to play like guitar together. And so what I said out loud was like, I'm really excited for fifth grade, and then I choked, and I was like, because we won't have Miss Butterly anymore. And she overheard me, and then got mad at me, and she gave me a yellow card, and told me off, and then was like upset. But there was like never a second for us to like talk, because I'm sure I would have told her, like, I like him, like, I didn't want him to know, and I panicked, like, I would hope that I would have said that in my fourth grade brain, but there was not a second, like, for her and I to, like, talk privately. It was, like, all in front of the classroom, and then, like, it was, like, this yellow card that just, like, deemed who I was in that moment, and it wasn't green, so that was, like, my one moment of, like, public punishment. I honestly think about this at least every other month. Like, I genuinely think about this in my adulthood very often as like a thing that I still hold a lot of shame and guilt and like genuine sadness around. Yeah, that's my story.
I just want to piggyback off of what Luke said, if that's okay, of like the school thing, because I remember like in my notes I wrote down something about school, but for some reason I didn't say it. Like at school, getting in trouble was a big deal, and like you always knew like who are the good kids, who are the teacher's favorites, and like who are the kids that don't listen, that are bad kids, whatever. And I think the way that like also subconsciously as kids, like the way that was framed, that was how you thought of people. Like if somebody's always getting in trouble, and the teacher's always talking about them, and then there's like a visual reminder of that they're the one that's getting in trouble. Like you saw them subconsciously as like a bad kid or somebody who wasn't a good friend or whatever. And then like the people who the teacher liked or would give this and this and that, like they were like the popular kids, and they were the kids that did this and this and that. And I think like even subconsciously you, I don't know, like I think that was like a thing in your mind that like this is a bad kid, this is a good kid, I want to be a good kid so I'm going to associate myself with that person. And like when you weren't able to associate yourself with those people, like you had like a sense of feeling othered, and you felt like you weren't, even if you weren't a bad kid, if you weren't the teacher's favorite, like you felt aware about it. And then even sometimes when you were the teacher's favorite, like you felt like you could say things or do things because you knew that the teacher would give you slack or whatever. Yeah. And I think also, now that like you talked about that experience that you had in fourth grade, I think a lot, like the way that my fifth and sixth grade teachers were was like insane. They had, and I think like a lot of teachers have a thing with like being strict, especially like female teachers that are kind of older, have a thing about like being strict on the things that the girls do and like coming down on them very hard. But the same thing that the boys, like, but the boys doing the same things, even worse. It's like, oh, like, it's just a boy, or like laughing and making it like a thing of life that you have to accept. And that, like, for a girl, like, that's not okay. You need to stop. But for a boy, it's like, oh, like, it's just silly, silly, being silly, fun, and whatever. That was my little tidbit.
I also have something, like, in response to that about what the concept that you explained of, like, the good kid versus the bad kid. And I'm wondering it like what this looked like where you grew up, because where I grew up it was like very distinct. But so in Connecticut, the redlining of the like socioeconomic classes and like racial classes in Connecticut is like very defined, because I live outside of Hartford. And I talk about it all the time. Like if you like drive from West Hartford into Hartford, you can see the wealth change. And that is all like very political. Our school would bus kids from Hartford into like our school system every day. So they would like get on the bus from Hartford and they would come to our extremely white like elementary, primary, middle school, high school. And you could see like it was just, I don't even know how to like really fully describe it, because it was just like stark. Like there was contrast, and there was narrative that was created too by the way that like they were treated and punished by teachers about like the Hartford kids being the bad kids or the troublemakers. And there was never, like, attention to any sort of thought process of, like alternative factors of, like, why, like, school for them might have been, like, more stress-inducing or, like, that. Like, there was no other narrative created other than, like, the Hartford kids were the troublemakers and bad kids. And they would, like, they would stay close to each other. And it was a dynamic that, like, in my adulthood, like, I think about a lot and I want to be able to understand. And I don't know, it just, it sticks.
I think in my school, because of how, like, separate it was, I don't know, I think sometimes, like, I think about it and I just wonder, like, how come, like, my experience wasn't that bad? But I was always, like, the only Black girl in my class. And then if there was diversity, it was, like, Arab girls. And they would be my friends because, like, they were the only other people that weren't white. And I feel like I could connect with them on the level of, like, oh, our experiences. Yeah, they were, like, my friends because they were the only other people that were white. And we could, like, connect on the fact that, like, even though necessarily our culture was the same, they were different from that. And our experiences were the same because we were immigrants and stuff like that. But I don't know. I feel like, at least for me, I didn't experience that much racism. Or I didn't. It wasn't experienced in the way that, like, things were taught. Like, the kids who were in trouble weren't necessarily the ones that were of color. But I think wealth and class had a big influence in that. Like, who was a good kid? Who was a bad kid? Like, the kids who didn't have the parents that were involved and always in school and had 9-to-5 jobs and, like, were respectable, like, those were the kids that were getting in trouble. And sometimes I wonder, was it because the factors that were going on at home weren't, like, taken into account and because, like, they didn't have a stable home environment. But yeah, I think the difference wasn't so much race, at least the way that I remember it. I think it was more about, like, class.
Thanks, y'all, for these stories. I feel like there's themes of, like, in everyone's story, a version of, like, what's, like, sort of public, like, public shaming and public punishment or public labeling. And then there was also kind of the theme of the opposite, like, sequestering yourself or being, like, behind closed doors and what that meant for punishment and safety. Yeah, and trust, like, I think is a huge, like, you know, yeah, lots of reflection on whether people had families who did or didn't trust their neighbors or could or couldn't trust the school system. Or
thanks for listening to that conversation with us. A few themes that we picked up on in that conversation, we heard themes of community and belonging and how those two were tied to a sense of safety or a lack thereof. We heard themes of shame through many people's stories and shame through the publicity of punishment, and also examples of, like, one-size-fits-all ways of treating punishment, especially in our schools. And we're excited to explore these and other themes that we pull out as we process this conversation more deeply in future episodes.
Thank you for listening to Justice Radio. Tune in next month for a continued conversation about how we're socialized to think about crime and punishment and to explore the ways safety is framed to us as we grow. And a big thank you to the YPC media team, Ashanti, Karen, and Cecile for helping us create a space of openness and compassion.
Thank you.